Hey, mental workers, welcome back to the Mental Work Podcast, your companion to early career psychology. I'm your host, Dr. Bronwyn Milkins, and today we are talking about working therapeutically with children under the age of 10, so young kids, with our guest today, who is Kate Christie. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Bron.
It's so good to have you back on the podcast. Thank you for coming back on.
Oh, it's even better to be back on the podcast, so thanks for having me back.
My pleasure. Listeners, you'll remember Kate from previous episodes, and I'll make sure that I link to those in the show notes. But Kate, for those listeners who haven't heard you before, could you please remind us who you are, and could you tell us what your non-psychology passion is?
Yeah, I don't actually know if this is a proper title, but it's a child and adolescent psychologist. So I generally work with 5 to 17-year-olds generally, and my non-passion would probably be yoga.
That's amazing. What type of yoga do you do?
Yoga with Adrian is amazing.
I love yoga with Adrian.
She's so good. Because when COVID hit, I couldn't go to my yoga teacher, and then I just did that. And now I do more yoga than I ever did before.
Yeah, no, I love yoga with Adrian, and I love her dog. It's Cookie, isn't it?
Benji.
Why did I think Cookie?
So cute.
But the dog is so cute. I feel like the dog is an integral part of like yoga with Adrian.
Yeah, and I think she knows that. Definitely leverages on the dog.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's really cool.
So, yeah, whatever yoga she does, I do that.
Yep, beautiful. And the reason why I wanted to talk about working therapeutically with kids under 10 is because when I think about it, I feel frightened and I feel like I'm not ready to work with kids under 10. They're scary. They're small. They have hands. They're grabby. They're unfocused. They have imaginations. They want to talk about Bluey. No filters. And I don't get them.
I've been there too. Don't worry.
So I thought maybe there's a listener out there who shares a similar perspective. And I'm sure there's other listeners who are listening to this and are like screaming, like, what the hell are you talking about? They're just kids. But I thought we could unpack the various aspects of working with kids under 10 so that listeners can walk away knowing some techniques that are really helpful for working with young kids, some approaches that you've found that work really well, some challenges and how you navigate those, and just some practical tips and tricks.
Yep, I think that sounds good. And then we'll convince you to come over to the dark side.
Oh my gosh. So maybe we can start off with, what drew you to working with young kids?
It wasn't a choice. So this will sound terrible. This is how a lot of things in my life happen, though. They just come. So now I believe in serendipity all the time.
Yeah.
So I used to work with, so I did casework and youth work, and it was always teenagers, and that was my thing. So when I did my 4+2, I had to do a placement, but I also had to get paid. So I ended up applying for a school counselling job.
Yeah.
And they chose where I went. So it was high school students and primary school. And I just assumed, well, I'm with the high school ones, keep going as I am used to. And they chucked me in a primary school. So for 5 years, I did that. And then when I got into private practice, I didn't really want to let go of them anymore, the primary school. So now I will go from 5 to 17, 18. I'm happy to go up to 24, but it's a very big range.
So what is the most rewarding aspects of working with young kids then? Because there must be for you to continue working with them.
It's very, very different. So I think for the first whole 12 months, I was probably, like you, I was scared. Like the first client that came in that was 6, I just kind of went, what is this?
Yeah.
How am I not a babysitter? What is happening?
Yeah.
But I think the fun, like it's so much fun, and it's thinking on your feet. It's being creative. Like it's not boring. Any day is not boring. There's always something. And I'm very fast and I have to be engaged or I get very bored very quickly. So I think it works for that kind of brain.
That's really cool. So do you feel like you can be quite creative working with young kids?
I would always say I'm not a creative person at all. But when I think about sessions, I have an idea and they change all the time. And if it doesn't work, then it's coming up with a different way of doing it, or they will come up with a different way that I've never thought of. or even just explaining the basics, like, you know, what's happening in the brain, what's the amygdala, coming up with stories around it. It's super creative.
That's cool. So you're drawing on that aspect of yourself, even though you feel like you're not creative.
Yeah, I think it made me realize maybe a bit later that it's not just about being able to draw or being able to play music. It's just creative thinking is still a way of being creative and being open to like the flexibility of someone else going, hey, what about this instead?
I reckon some people would feel quite stressed hearing what you say, that you need to constantly think on your feet and adapt and think of new things. Do you find that stressful?
It's that good stress.
Okay.
Like, I don't know everything. That's a bit arrogant. I know the basics.
Yeah.
So it's that challenge of going, how am I going to present this differently for this kid? Or what kind of conversation is this going to bring up? Because I have no idea where this will go. And so I think that's the good kind of keep it interesting challenge. But yeah, some days is definitely more stress than it's worth.
Do your explanations ever fall flat and like a kid is just looking at you like, what the hell did you just try and explain to me about the amygdala?
Absolutely.
Okay. But do you feel less pressure with young kids than adults, or do you feel more pressure?
I think less, because, and this could be my own thing, of kids are happy, like they will tell me and I will tell them, like, if this doesn't make sense, just tell me or give me a look, because then I'll know what that means, that you know, don't know what I'm talking about. And they will do that. They generally don't pretend with any of that. They'll just go, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then we might draw it, or, you know, how does your brain work? How could you see it? We might get books out. We might get toys out, and then explaining it in a different way. And metaphors, so many metaphors that kids start coming up with their own metaphors, which some I may have borrowed.
Oh, yes. I'll tell clients when I borrow their metaphors and I'll be like, that was a great metaphor. I am keeping that one.
Exactly.
Yep. I'm wondering, do you feel like it is rewarding working with young kids? Because maybe a myth that I've heard through the grapevine is that, well, you can't make much of a difference with young kids. What would you say to someone who believes that?
I always look at it as it's laying the foundations regardless. So if they come into counseling, and they probably do have a preconceived idea of what this is, you know, you definitely get the kids in that, and I'll say, how come you're here? Did mum make you come? Did the teacher make you come? Like, what's the reason behind it? And we'll talk about that. And then it's the idea of going, well, counseling is not what you thought it was. Like, you can say what you like. You can stop talking about what you don't like. That even if they go away, I always have that thought of one day they might come back when they're 12 or 15 or 20 and go, you know what? It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that scary. Maybe I'll give it a go now.
Yeah. So you're laying the groundwork for that positive experience to do with counselling and helping them to understand that this is their space?
Yeah, I think that's always my main thing for me. For them, obviously, there's different goals.
Yeah.
But I also find often you can have almost an end. So I remember our admin saying, because some people see adults at our clinic and they keep coming. You said, but what I've noticed with yours is you seem to have a chunk. They'll come for a chunk and then they'll stop, and then you'll get a new lot, and then maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. But it seems to be like a cycle that they don't need as long maybe or as much to have a little bit of an impact.
Oh, okay. That's really cool. So do you find that young kids, they might come with a specific challenge and maybe that only needs like 6-10 sessions?
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's having someone who listens to them and they can talk about stuff and they know it's kind of normal. Sometimes it is a bit more, like there's a lot more advocacy I think I do for younger kids, like with school, putting in supports in place, what supports at home. So it's kind of looking at the external stuff and how can I help that? And then we'll do what we can with you in here.
Is it tough building rapport with young kids? And if it is, what do you do to help build rapport with them?
I find it easier. The younger they are, the easier it is. Teenagers take a little while,
yeah,
because they're, you know, they're a bit guarded. Whereas the younger, like the dream is to have the ultimate playroom just full and full and full of toys.
Yes.
But I don't have space.
Okay.
But there are still toys around, there's colouring. And I always talk to the client, like to the kid.
Yeah.
And say, this is your space. You touch whatever you want, do whatever you want. If you want to get up and walk and look at a book while I'm talking, go for it. We play a game together. And usually then you can start introducing other little things and talking about, oh, what's it like with this? I wonder what this is like. And lots of stories that we share. So, oh, I remember when I was at school, this happened. And I reckon first session most of the time, you'll have most of them on board wanting to come back.
Okay, cool. And can you just maybe more explicitly tell us what kinds of activities you do with them in that first session? Like, you're not talking with them for 50 minutes like you would with an adult, right?
Absolutely not. So a first session would be kid comes in, parents come in. We do the kind of boring stuff. This is how it works. This is how long it goes for. Depending on the age and the situation, I much prefer the parent not to be in the room because it goes a lot quicker, whereas they're a little bit guarded if the parents are there. And then I'll get them to pick a game. So if they're into Lego, we'll build Lego and then we start chatting about stuff. If they like drawing, we might do a game of you draw this, I draw that, and they show each other what it is, or whatever they're into, that's where you go.
Yep. So it's really game-based and play-based.
Very much. Sort of like, you know that, I always look at it like that metaphor. It's not a metaphor. I don't know what this one's called. You know when you talk to a teenager, your best one is if you're driving and you're next to each other?
Yes. Yeah.
Same kind of thing that I think we bring in with kids is let's play a game, but while we're playing, we might just ask questions or I wonder about this. And then we start talking and whatever parents have brought in, I'll kind of try and drop that in a little bit and see where that lands. And then if it doesn't, just quickly move on and they're fine.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So maybe could you talk us through some of the approaches that you do use with young kids? So like, I think I saw that you're trained in Lego therapy, or is that just something you've done through personal development?
Yep. So I've done personal development where I don't even know what they call it. It's more of a group program, but then you can adapt it to anything.
That's really cool.
Using Lego as therapy, basically.
Nice.
And that is fun.
What does it look like? Like, is it literally just building Lego? Like,
So the one that I do is like, oh, it's called Brick by Brick, and it's in a nice way, if it's like fitting, you might have three kids together.
Yeah.
And then you sort of keep the age relatively the same. And then they each have a job. And so one will pick the pieces, one will build, and one does the instructions.
Oh, cool.
And then they swap after a few minutes.
Oh.
And so you actually don't do a lot at all. It's more just getting them to build up the skills of communicating, connecting with others. And it was made around neurodivergent. So I think it started with autism and then they kind of added ADHD and then they went, nah, you know what, this benefits everybody.
That's so cool.
So it is a very, very fun way of doing it.
That's awesome, because I bet like in doing that you would be teaching so much about sharing and turn-taking and communicating as a team and being a team player, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and like even in sessions if it's just two of us, it's not technically that structured.
Yeah.
And it might be we just pick one color, or let's build how we're feeling today, or maybe we will build a set together and then we'll do the jobs of what part do you want me to do? Do you want me to do this first and then you build and then we swap? And then over time you'll see that they won't swap at first because everyone wants to build. So but then over time it will start, and you know that you've kind of got an in once they're like, yep, you can build now.
So I don't know if Lego is your favorite activity, but if it is, you can expand on it a bit more. But could you share with us an example of like your favorite therapeutic technique or activity that you find really effective with kids under 10?
I'm sure everyone will have this in their little kit. Is Jenga, but you put questions on it.
Oh, yes. Yep, I've got that.
And so mainly for me, because I do get bored, and kids do like to play it more than once, where I'll rotate the questions every now and again. And it's a good way of sticking some of your own questions on that you might want to suss out.
Yes, and that's so true. Yeah.
And kids love answering questions about themselves. And then depending on who it is you're working with, sometimes they do want you to answer as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't. They just want you to keep asking questions, and don't really worry about your answers. But it's a good way of just going, you know, I'm just a normal person like you. We like the same things.
No, Jenga is great. I'm very fond of Uno. as a therapy
game. Well, that's definitely my favorite, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's not a proud favorite, I'm finding.
Oh, really?
Have you played Taco Cat?
Have I played Taco Cat? I feel like I have it in my office, but I haven't opened it. So, no, I haven't played Taco Cat. What is it?
That's a crowd favorite. There's like five things. And as you put the card down, if you match it, you got to like snap.
Oh,
and then
cool.
The other person keeps all the cards and then you want to get rid of your card.
Yeah.
That one is a good one. You can't talk as much in that one.
Cool.
But I do stupid actions to all the things in there. So then they kind of get on board with that. That's a good icebreaker one or an end of session. Like, oh, we've had a hard one. Let's play that.
Yeah. No, that sounds amazing. And how do you weave in anything else that you need to get across? So say you have a young person who is worrying a lot about mum or dad when they're at kindy and it's really hard for them and they've got a bit of separation anxiety. How do you weave in some therapeutic, I guess, psycho-ed or activities to help them with those sorts of things?
This is where our little amygdala thing comes in.
Okay.
And we'll do a little bit of often I'll do the basics of feeling. So we all got to have some feeling cards in there and trying to gauge where they're at with feelings. Can you feel them? Like, what does that feel like in your body? Maybe doing thermometers, depending on where they're at, if they can do that. Or if not, we might do colors. And so we might have toys, we might have textures, we might have Legos, and then match the colors to what feelings they feel. And then from there, trying to start to recognize what's happening in the body. When you're feeling happy, what happens when you're feeling, when you go to school, oh, do you ever feel funny in your tummy? Sometimes I feel funny. It's like on a roller coaster. And then we try and link that bit to it and then see how we feel around that. It's almost like chunks in our session where you might do, like I'll do a little bit of that stuff and then we might do a breathing activity together. And then we might play a game and then we might come back and read a book and then we might do some interceptive stuff and then we're done. So it's lots of little things where you're like moving all the time.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't worked with kids in a few years, but I remember doing that. Like I would plan my sessions in 10 to 15 minute chunks because you're not going to have a child's attention for any more than that, right?
Yeah.
On a single activity.
Yeah, and then if you can bring it in where it's like, because I'll always go, oh, you pick, what are we doing? And even then, like if they pick out, I mean, this is not my favorite, but when they get out the puppets or the dolls and you got to play with the dolls. But it is really helpful in that the story starts coming out and then you might be the one that's going to school and, oh, mate, I've got a headache and my tummy's feeling a little bit funny. How are you feeling? How can you help me? And then they'll happily play that out as a whole different thing of just playing toys rather than, well, no, you're trying to trick me again, going back to that stuff.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. So it's important to be genuine with your young people.
Yeah.
And not try and deceive them into doing therapy stuff.
Yeah. That's what I always, or if they're a little bit younger, like 8, 9, 10, I will say, bear with me just for a second because it's so important that you just know this information, but let's just do it really quickly.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
And then we kind of go, right, this is why this is happening.
Yeah.
And then once they kind of they get why it's happening, it's not so scary, they will have those conversations again at some point.
Okay, and for sure. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I'm wondering, do you ever give young people homework? And if you do you let their caregivers know? Like, how do you go about that?
Yes. So I will say, I've got a challenge for you this week.
Oh, cool. Oh, I love that. Oh.
If you don't do it, it's okay because it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll say, do you want to practice this? And I'll practice this and then we'll compare notes. So it depends what it is. And then normally, like I might, you know, there's display folders because we do lots of worksheets, drawings, yes, brainstorms, yeah, all that stuff. So I put all of that in. They take it home and then on the front, I'll usually stick a post-it or something and go like, these are your challenges this week. And then when we see the parent or whoever's brought them in, I'll just go like, oh, this is what we're going to practice this week. And then we see what happens.
How does that go when you talk to the caregiver about the challenge that the young person you would like them to do?
I think that's the thing for the caregiver is having something concrete to take home.
Yeah.
So I send out a like an FAQ type thing after our first session just go, this is what to expect. And it's got a little thing about this is why play is therapeutic. It's not just because I'm very self-conscious. And sometimes parents will sit in and most of them don't, but a few will kind of go like, well, what's happening here? You're just playing.
Yeah.
Which you then sort of question yourself and go, oh my gosh, am I just playing? What am I doing? So if you've got something concrete to go, look, this is what we practice today. If you keep doing this, and then they can, you know, the breathing or whatever. And then if you can just practice it in the shopping line, practice it on the way to school, start practicing it at school, this will help.
Yeah.
And usually the parents are pretty, or the caregivers are pretty on board.
Yeah.
With supporting that because it's, okay, good. It's something I can do. It's something they can do. Something's come out of.
Yeah. So it's clear, concrete. There's an objective. And it's easy for them to do as well. It's achievable.
Yeah. Like it's never anything. If we've done something in the session that we haven't finished, like a worksheet or a brainstorm we were coming up with, I'll put that in there and go, when over the week, if you think of anything else to add, just add it and show me next week because that will be amazing.
Yeah.
And sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. Look at it again. But
is there anything that you did when starting out working with young kids that when you look back on it, you're like, oh, I wouldn't do that now?
Oh, yeah. And I think I still sometimes do it now.
Okay.
You have to be, because I'm quite flowy. I'm not very sort of firm. You really need firm boundaries.
Oh, okay, sure.
And how you put that across while maintaining a positive relationship. So there were, at the beginning, I don't think I'm as bad now, but it would almost be like a free-for-all.
Yep.
And then, you know, kid being kid, they're pushing those boundaries and they want to know how far they can go and how much can they trust you. And so you'd have, you know, things getting thrown across the room and sand getting chucked everywhere, standing on desks. And you're just like, oh, this is not it. That's now not safe. Like, what am I doing? So really having the confidence to go, oh, that's a boundary there. We have to rein that in and then getting on with it.
This is actually a really good point. I'm glad that we are talking about this because I think something that I'm unsure about is like, I don't want to be disciplining your kid, but maybe that's the wrong way to think about it. I'm not disciplining your kid when they're throwing stuff across the room. I'm trying to have a therapeutic moment with them and setting appropriate boundaries. How do you think of that?
Yeah. So I think at the beginning, definitely I was like you going like, this is meant to be a fun place and a safe place and you're meant to kind of be in charge of this space. And but I mean, you know, throwing a book in my head is not really okay.
No, it's not.
So I think that, and looking at it as, like I often look at the bigger picture as well. And so at school setting, you don't see it as much, but in private, you will see how they interact with the main caregiver. And you see some of that same stuff happening. So you can kind of see why it's come in and it's the push of like, how far can I go? And if you did just give free rein, that's probably so dysregulating for a kid to just keep going and no one's saying anything. So I always now, I will look at it that way and go, right, what can I let slide? And then what's not okay? And explaining like, why is it not okay?
Yeah. Can you give us an example of what you might say to a young person?
Yep. I'll redirect. And I don't know if you've ever done any play therapy training.
No, and I haven't.
There's the line. So one is like always say what you can do, not what you can't do.
Yep.
And things are not for that. So if a kid's standing on a chair, we'll just go, oh, chairs are not for standing on. Maybe, and then just ignore that bit and then going on with something else. And hopefully they're, oh, yep, chairs aren't for standing on. Or, you know, floors are for sitting on. And then they'll do that. No chairs for sitting on, but you know, my gist. And then if that doesn't work, it's then getting the stronger boundaries of, please don't throw that book at my head. It might hurt me. And then going on with, okay, let's do this instead. Should we color in together? And never any, like I don't reprimand in a way. I'll just redirect it.
Yes.
To the point, and I've very rarely done this, where if it just does keep going, I'll say, what's happening for you? Like how are you feeling? Obviously you're a little bit upset or frustrated. Is it something I've done? Or if you had a bad day? And if it keeps going, then I'll say, I think we might need to end early because you just may not want to be here today. Is that right? And at that point, kind of giving them the choice of, are we ending it, are we, or can we talk about it, or are we just going to move on? And that way it's still their choice. Like, they know, hopefully, that they can stay. They just can't be throwing things at you.
Yeah.
Or they can leave if they just can't do it today.
Yeah. It sounds like it could be quite difficult to maintain this frame as like the cool psych who, it's your space is yours. You can do whatever you want in here and tell me all your secrets and I'll keep them safe and I'll help you and I'm cool. And balancing that with being quite boundaried. I don't know. Do you find that difficult?
Yeah, look, I don't love it. It's not my favorite part, but like, I will try and go a little bit more maybe therapeutic in like, what's happening for you? What would it feel like if someone did that to you? What do you think might happen if you throw that book at me? But by that point, if it's that quite escalated, you won't get much back. That sometimes it's then going, okay, safety over this relationship.
Yeah.
And then it's looking at like, are they ready to be in here? Maybe it's too confronting and it's not one-on-one with the child that we need. That's when we do go back to the, maybe it's parenting support instead until they're ready to come back.
So then if there's behaviors that are difficult and you find that they're challenging and I guess rubbing up against some of your own boundaries, it might be an indication to stop, pause, reflect on what's happening, reflect on the approach that you're taking with the young person.
Yeah, I think okay. So. I usually have like I don't know where I got this number from. I have like a four sessions. If by four sessions nothing's shifted in a positive way, then I start thinking like something else might need to happen.
Yeah, okay, so reassess.
Parents in, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a good barometer. And I think that's really important to get across to listeners that if you feel in your gut like something is not working, do stop, reassess. See what's happening. Think if you've missed anything. Think about the dynamic that you have between you and the client. And if there's anything that you could do differently.
Because not every child under 10 is able to do one-on-one therapy.
Yeah, no, that's like, a really good point.
Sometimes they are really, like, they will just be there to play. And then you have to go, okay, no, this is actual play now. This isn't.
Yeah.
There's nothing therapeutic about this one.
Yeah. We've been playing Barbie and Bluey every session now.
Oh, yeah, and I'm getting nothing here.
Yeah. So, Kate, are there any other uncomfortable or kind of taboo aspects of working with young children that you think should be discussed more openly?
I think the confidentiality and privacy. Sometimes, and it depends on the family dynamics again, but I think it's being clear that there is still a level of confidentiality that can be maintained there. And then there's obviously things, well, a parent needs to be involved or a caregiver needs to be involved in this. So regardless of the age of the child, even if it is a 5 or 6 year old, I'll say like, whatever you say in here stays in here except for, you know, all the rules.
Yeah.
And I'll never say, you know, you said this and I said that and you said this and I said, they're never going to know that stuff. And if you have a bad day with mom and, you know, you call her a rude word, that can stay in here. It's okay. You're not going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But also conveying that to parents that I'm not going to tell you every single thing that happened because then they'll tell me nothing and we won't get anywhere. So I think making it a little bit clearer around what is confidentiality for a kid under 10. And some people will say none, you know, they should know everything their 6, 7, 8 year old is doing, saying, and some maybe not. So I don't know if it's as clear as when they're a bit older.
Yeah, so it seems to be a bit of a grey area.
Yeah, and even like some parents will want to come into the room, which is okay, but from experience I definitely say you get more when they're not there just because, I mean, we're all different around our parents even now, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
So it's good to not. So sometimes I'll even do a split and say, all right, why don't you come in for the first bit, give me a little update. And then we'll just do the rest and you just wait out there or get a coffee. And having that conversation around like why you maybe shouldn't have the caregiver there the whole time and if they're on that page or not.
So it sounds like maybe there's a lot in your role about being clear with the expectations around confidentiality and what we're doing and their level of involvement.
Yeah, I think it particularly comes out, and this is not, I'd say it's a smaller percentage, so not to scare anyone, but it particularly when parents are separated and it's not amicable is where it will come up of, oof, okay, there's nothing concrete clear that I can give you, but this is kind of how I work. So I hope that works for you too.
Yeah, and I'm noticing myself feel a bit protective because I think this is an area that I would say to listeners to make sure that you seek supervision around with separated parents and it's not amicable. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Because I think if you wade into this area and then you don't have clear procedures and policies and knowing yourself what to say, I've just seen too much stuff online about how people have gotten into trouble with separated high conflict families.
Yes. And it's being consistent, like regardless, because, you know, you'll hear two completely different stories and, you know, you try not to side with anyone and you're like, okay, I'm trying to say Switzerland here.
Yeah.
Well, you need to just go, you know what, this is how I work and just keep sticking to that.
Yeah.
And like for so many clients, I will ring my supervisor, I'll ring AAPI, I'll ring someone and go, I think I know, but can you just tell me again? Like I've got someone who's at this funny age. This is happening. This is what the parents are saying. What do I do?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it can be messy. And then the whole thing of like family court, are you going to get subpoenaed? And you're just like, oh, I don't want that.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole, it's such a huge area. Like, does that weigh on you?
It does. Yeah. That's probably, if I was to say like not work with this group, that would be my number one. Just can we get rid of that whole messy family situations and I don't want complaints made. I don't want to be subpoenaed. I don't want to go to court. I don't want to write reports. That's probably the biggest one. But I mean, it's not a huge part of it. It's there. It's definitely there. Be aware it's there. Have the supervision. Just be clear of what kind of the rules are, I think. And then it's not a huge part. So there is more enjoyment than that stuff.
Yeah. I imagine if it was just like subpoenas and family court all the time and high conflict, it'd be quite an unpleasant role.
So like when your intake comes in, knowing at least enough of the story to then balance and go, you know what, I've got quite a few tricky ones. I can't take another one. Yeah, figuring out what to do with that. Not taking on too many kind of messy ones.
Yeah. And in your practice, I know some psychologists, they are just like, look, I don't see any clients who are involved in family court or legal matters. Is that you?
That's not me. But in saying that, I do have a question on my intake form and I ask for any court orders, blah, blah, blah. Funnily enough, it often comes up after the fact.
Yeah.
So kind of like, surprise, we forgot to tell you this bit. And I don't know, maybe it's because a lot of people go, nope.
Wow. So how did you go about navigating this area? Like, did you receive supervision or did you do any other professional development with reading or is this learning through experience?
Probably all the above. So because I used to work in homelessness and like quite closely with FACTS, I don't know what they're called now, DCJ, whatever they're called this week.
Department of Child and Justice.
Yeah, something like that, the child service
people. Okay, sure.
Although it's different in every state, right?
So, yeah, it is. Yeah, I think in WA it's DCP, so Department of Child Protection.
Ours changes like every 2 years, so you're like, I don't know. But so I did a lot of work with them, so I'd have to know all those. And then being at schools, we'd always have to do the training for child protection training and up to that. And so with that, like it doesn't change massively over the year. So there's that. And then as I go on, it's more, you know, reading anything that's changed or supervision or, kind of as it comes up. If something a bit iffy comes up, then I'll like research like crazy.
Awesome. I'm so glad that we were able to talk about that. That was a good conversation. If any listeners have been listening and they are like, you know what, maybe I will work with kids under 10. Maybe this is a passion area for me. Could you just let us know, like, what qualities do you think that psychologists need to have to work with kids under 10?
Oh, definitely you need to like it. Like if you don't love kids and you don't like kids in your space, just don't like
it. Yeah, okay, sure.
It's messy. It's noisy. It's high energy. Like you need to love kids. And I think I've worked out I'm actually more comfortable and better with even just in my own life. Like being with kids more than being with adults.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I figured it out at a 30th birthday a while ago and went, oh my God, I'm a big child.
You're like, I want to sit at the kids' table.
Yeah, that would be fun. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, like, it's challenging, but in a good way. So if you want to be challenged, I think it's also a good way to do it.
And like kid psychologists, they're in really high demand as well, right?
Oh, I never know how to answer this one because, sure, but you know what the challenge is actually?
Yeah.
Is kids go to school, parents work, so the days are a little bit quiet. The yes. afternoons, they'll be booked out for months.
Everyone, there's 20 people waiting for the 4 p.m. slot.
Everyone wants the 4 p.m. Some will take the 3. Older ones are okay with the 5 or the 6. But, yeah, the daytime is a little hard to fill. So you probably could fill it if people could get there. But
yeah, okay.
And telehealth is not a great option for kids.
No. Oh, that's a really good point. Yes. When I was working with kids during COVID, gosh, that was
Oh, so hard. That never again.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Just all these young people spinning on their computer chairs.
On the things you see where you're like, I don't need to see all of that, please.
That's yes, absolutely.
Your private bedroom, stay there.
Yeah. Totally. And Kate, what are some resources you might recommend for working therapeutically with young kids, like books, articles, PD, toys?
Definitely Uno. Definitely Uno anyway.
Mm.
Just some games, even if they're just games that you like, I think you need a stack of them.
Books, people, training.
Books on I'm terrible with authors and I feel bad because they put so much effort into their book. There's a book, a good starting book. I don't use it as much now, but I did use it a lot at the beginning. I think it's called Creative Ideas for Working with Kids.
Okay.
It's like a workbook and there's all different activities in there.
Does it have the cloud on the front cover?
Yeah, it's like blue. They're from Melbourne, two people.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go get it off my bookshelf. I think I have it over here.
It's a good one.
Yes. This one?
Yes.
Yep. So it's called Creative Ways to Help Children Manage Big Feelings, A Therapist's Guide to Working with Preschool and Primary Children. And it's by Dr. Fiona Zant and Dr. Suzanne Barrett. And yes, I think they are Melbourne psychologists. And I've got so many tabs in this book because every activity is great. And they've separated it by like, do you need activities for anger? Wow. Do you need activities for anxiety?
And I find it's really good to, you can change them a little bit.
Yeah.
Like once you get used to it, you can like change it just a bit and then it's a bit different. So I really like that one.
And I feel like you have to. There's an activity in this book that I remember doing with a kid like a few years ago. And it was like, look, I can't remember exactly what it's teaching, but it was like you put pasta in a strainer. And I think it was showing how you can let thoughts go. And like I did not make the connection clear to the young child. And they're just like, what the hell are we doing?
The volcano is always a good one, but I ended up buying, I think from Target, it was like $12. And now I just have to, like, it's got a volcano then you just put the stuff in.
Yes.
And so that's always a good one. A bit messy, but it's good.
My low budget one was because I didn't have access to that. I used what are they called? Fizzy drinks, like in cans. Oh. And I was like, if you shake up a can. And then I would go outside with them and we would like explode the can.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The other children's books that I have is the Whole Brain Child Workbook.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And so it's really good to parents.
It is. And that's by Dan Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson. And then the other one I have, which is a bit old school, but I got it because my supervisor at the time was quite old school. And I think this was made like in the 80s, but it's called Creative Interventions for Troubled Youth and Children. And that's by Liana Lowenstein.
She's amazing. And she has so many free resources online. So if you Google her, I think she has a website and she's got so many resources online.
It's really good books. And I've got the anxiety. She had one on anxiety as well. And again, I love these children's books because like with this one, I'm just opening it and it's like activity, theme, ages. So it's the hot potato game. The theme is identifying feelings, ages 4 to 10. Then I love it how they do that in kids' books.
Yeah. And it's really good when you like it. The other downside is it's a lot more planning.
Yes, it is.
Like when you have older ones, it's you kind of just turn up, do your job, switch off.
Yes.
It may not switch off, but hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's just like, what am I going to do today? What's my backup if that doesn't work? What resources do I need to bring in? What do I need to buy more of?
Yeah, no, it is a lot more planning. I remember doing that with kids and like being like, oh, okay, I need to bring in this today.
Yeah, I'm just lugging lots of stuff. But my one tip is, I don't do it anymore because I hate it. But sand, like kinetic sand is amazing, but it's very hard to clean up. Use rice instead.
Oh.
Because rice is like super easy to clean up. And you can't mold it, but they don't usually mold anything anyway. So they just play in the sand, they bury stuff. The rice is good.
Wow, rice is genius.
That's my tip. And if you really into it, you can color it if you want to.
That is an A+ tip. I hope everybody was listening to this episode just towards the end here so that they could get that tip because that is genius. I have so much kinetic sand and I feel like the total weight of my kinetic sand goes down by 500 grams every time I get it out for a kid because it just like goes everywhere.
Yes. And it just gets stuck in the carpet. You just can't get it out.
It gets stuck in the carpet. Yeah. Mm.
But rice, vacuum up and it's like a dollar for a big bag.
Wow, amazing. That is so true. Kinetic sand is quite expensive.
And it weighs a ton because if you have to throw it around, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, so, and that was the thing because when I was working with kids, I was working at about 5 different offices. So I was lugging my kinetic sand between each office.
Wow.
So rice is the way to go. I love it. Great idea. So Kate, is there anything else that we haven't touched on which you think would be really good for early career psychs to know about working with young kids?
I think going on from your books, I think anything by Dan Siegel is amazing. Just so you're really clear around what's developmentally okay and knowing for you, like what do you work between? And then being able to educate parents because you are going to work with parents a lot more. Which also some people are turned off by because parents can be a little bit challenging. But just understanding that group really well to be able to reassure parents.
Totally. And I'll pop the link in the show notes, but like Dan Siegel's hand model of the brain and the flip your lid concept, life-changing.
That's it. And teaching it to kids. And when I was at schools and sometimes even in session, I'll just do the action.
Yeah.
And they know exactly what you're talking about. You don't need to say a word. And then that's almost like they're little sign of, I've just got to breathe or I've just got to go for a walk. And you just, I walk around the office sometimes like flip, 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 flip. And the parents go, what are you doing?
And parents love it as well. I found that they were really receptive to like the whole like hand mold the brain plus flip your lid kind of thing. And it's like, hey, we need to help them get the lid back on so they can be regulated.
Yeah. And I think having a lot of that kind of, I don't think it's basic, but it is sort of basic, I guess, info of like, what's happening and I'm constantly talking about what can your child do versus what won't they do. If they won't, fair call, be a parent, discipline, whatever it is there. If they can't, we need to change your thinking a little bit. Like it's not on them to change, it's on you to change a bit.
Absolutely. Kate, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast again. It's been so wonderful to have your insights and expertise in this area. If listeners want to find out more about you or get in touch, where can they find you?
I've got a nice new Instagram page happening now that I'm actually posting on a lot more.
Woohoo!
So that's probably the best spot where everything is and then it'll keep me going. So that's just Kate Christie Psychology.
Excellent. I will pop the link in the show notes.
Lovely. Thank you.
No worries. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you loved this episode, do share it with a colleague, mate, friend, person down the street, anyone who wants to listen to it or you think would listen to it. It really does help us get the word out there and get the podcast into more ears. And if you ever want to say hi to me, you can drop me a line at mentalworkpodcast@gmail.com or you can hit me up on the socials. That's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good one and catch you next time. Bye.